You're listening to TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio. Now more of the Wild About Pets radio show on TalkZone.com. Once again, here's Susan Frank.
Welcome back to the show and my discussion with Dr. Deborah Horowitz, veterinary behaviorist. Wild About Pets is sponsored by Nutrisource, a super premium dog food. We are looking at photographs today of the cats that we're talking about. You can see those by clicking the purple Look While You Listen buttons, either on today's July 23rd episode page or the Talk Zone homepage. And our phone lines are open. We're taking calls at 888-463-6748. That's 888. Go for it. Or you can email me at susan@wildaboutpets.net. Anyway, so let's talk more, Dr. Horowitz, about another very common issue that I'm sure you hear about and I hear about all the time. That is that people, their cats have scratching posts in their homes, but the cats are not using them. They are using the furniture and destroying many pieces. What could we do, and what are possibly some of the causes for this?
Well, that's a great question because it is a big problem for people, and I realize that a lot of people don't want to declaw their cats, but they want to spare their furniture as well. They kind of feel caught in this catch-22, I guess. First of all, again, it kind of goes back to understanding why a cat is using their claws at all. So marking is a major method of communication in cats. When a cat marks with their claws, they leave both a visual mark, so that ripping that they do with the claws themselves, and they leave a scent mark, because on the bottom of the cat's feet, they have scent glands, odor glands, that leave a scent mark. So it's sort of the cat's billboard. And where the billboard's located, just like in advertising, is important. Location, location, location.
Mm.
So very often, and I can understand this, people have their scratching post somewhere out of the way because they're kind of maybe ugly and they don't want it in the middle of the room. But the cat says, I am leaving a message. Where is the best place to leave my message? Oh, look! The arm of the sofa is the first thing everyone sees when they walk in this house. And they will make no mistake that I, Super Kitty, live here. Okay?
Uh-huh.
So they're going to pick a very prominent place to leave that message. And then there's also the texture. Sometimes they like it because they get a good grip and a nice tear. Nothing like leaving a big visual mark.
Mm.
And cats will scratch and stretch when they first wake up. And they might increase their scratching when they're frustrated. So that thinking about where to put, I think it should actually be called marking post instead of scratching post, because people assume the cat's just scratching like an itch.
Yes, right.
But it's not. It's really more like sending an email or more like updating Facebook to the cat. So it's a lot more important than just scratching an itch. So the placement of the marking post is really important then. It needs to be someplace where the cat spends their time, and near where they wake up, you may need more than one, and where the people spend their time. So the cat feels like he's communicating with the other living beings in the household. Our cats communicate with us all the time, but they're going to use cat communication techniques because they're never going to be people. So they might want to, we leave our scent on everything we sit on,
mm-hmm.
and they might want to leave their scent behind as well. So sometimes you need to put the marking post or scratching post right by that arm of the sofa that the cat's going after. Cover that arm of the sofa either with a sheet, sometimes double-sided tape will keep the cat off, or even some plastic. And then leave the scratching post there until the cat's really using it well. And then slowly move it to a less prominent place in the room, and the cat will probably stick with it. The other big problem that I see is that someone had a cat for 5, 6, maybe even 8 years that they let scratch on the sofa because it's the old sofa and I don't care about it. Then they got new furniture and they want the cat to stop. And that just doesn't make sense to the cat. So when you introduce that new furniture, you need to keep it covered. You need to provide a scratching post right there. You need to realize it's going to take the cat some time to realize this billboard's closed. I lost my Facebook page, whatever you want to call it, and I need to set up a new one.
Oh, good advice. Yes, location. I think that's, and the idea that it's a real marketing post is something we don't think about.
Right.
You relate that a lot of the issues are related to the basic behaviors of cats and their needs, and we've been talking about some of them. And you mentioned that how they communicate is one of them, which we just addressed. And I have a photograph. It's number 9 that shows a picture of a cat. It looks like it's smiling. And I know that I've spoken on this show before about how often we don't understand how our cats are communicating because we're used to dogs' very expressive faces. And so we think that cats aren't communicating, but actually that's not the case, is it, Dr. Horowitz? They are communicating very clearly to us if we only knew how to read their cues.
Well, that's very true. And, of course, people think they're reading certain cues in dogs when they don't, but that's another radio show.
Right.
but in this picture, for example, the cat looks pretty content.
Yes.
His ears are pushed to the side because the brush is there, but they're relaxed. They're not flat against his head. They're not perked up really tight. His eyes are closed. You can tell that the cat is not asleep because the eyes appear to be willfully closed, as like the brush is coming over his head, as opposed to when you're asleep, your eyes go closed.
Yes.
And his face is soft, and his whiskers, though, are out a little bit, so he's still aware. And I would say if I were to look at this cat, and his feet are tucked under in what we call the loaf of bread or meatloaf position, and he looks relaxed, and he looks like he's probably enjoying that little brushing on the top of his head. And if someone took the brush and put it down on the side of his cheek, he might rub his cheek against that, and that's called bunting. And when cats do that, they're kind of marking you. Mm-hmm. And they have also scent glands, odor glands on the side of their face. That is another way that they mark their territory, and it's another way that they mark things to feel familiar. So two cats who live together might rub against one another to mark each other. It's a way to say, I like you. And when the cat comes up and rubs against you with their face and their body, that's another way of saying, hi, I like you. It's a social interactive. It doesn't necessarily mean I want you to pet me, which some people say that they, you know, their cat does it and they reach down and the cat hisses at them. Because the cats don't pet each other, you know.
Right.
And so this rubbing behavior is a way of saying, oh, I like you. I want to smell like you and I want you to smell like me. And it's a communication. It's a friendly communication. It isn't always an invitation to be stroked.
Oh, that's perfect. So if we just pay attention, and if the cat does hiss or show some displeasure, it just means, okay, there's nothing wrong with the cat. It hasn't gone crazy.
Right.
It just doesn't want to be petted right then.
It's sort of like, have you ever tried to greet somebody and you've had that, like, hesitation of the handshake hug?
Yes.
It's kind of like that, okay? Uh-huh. The cat just wants to do a handshake and you want to do a hug, and the cat says, no, we're not hugging buddies. We're handshake buddies.
Right.
We need to understand that all cats have different tolerances for physical interaction. Some cats are what I call cuddle kitties. Oh, they just love it. You can't hold on to them and smush them enough. And then there are other cats who just want to sit on your lap and not be touched, or ones that want to sit on the end of the couch and they want to be near you, but they don't really need to be stroked to be happy, which mm-hmm. might make us unhappy. But again, you have to think about that hug and handshake thing.
Right, and respecting the creature and some of their needs.
Yeah.
Now, in photograph number 10, I have a photo of a little black kitten with an alarm clock, because I wanted to talk about that there are times that our cats communicate quite clearly to us, and especially when they want us to wake up in the morning. And I know my cat, personally, Willie, you know, took to licking and tapping papers. And when that didn't work, he took to chewing on the edges of any drawers I had left open. Anything to wake me up. Then when I would close the drawers, then he came to tap my nose to wake me up. Now, I thought it was all very cute, but I know some people are quite irritated by this internal alarm clock in their cats. Is there anything that you have found that sometimes is helpful for when it becomes highly intrusive? Or is something we just must tolerate about our cats?
Well, it has several facets. First of all, cats are what are called crepuscular, meaning they're most active at dawn and dusk. So early morning is a cat's best time. Mm. They're up and they're ready to go. So that's part of the nature. And young kittens especially haven't really gotten into our routine, so that they're going to be up and ready to go. Second, behaviors are controlled by their consequences. Across the board, across species, doesn't matter. So if your cat eventually gets you up, then it doesn't matter if it had to try six things to get you up. You got up, and it worked. So that if you don't want to get up when your cat wakes you, then you never should. And I know that's easier said than done, but if initially you get up and feed the cat or play with it or something like that, then waking you had a good outcome for the cat. Maybe that isn't even what the cat wanted. Again, sometimes we misinterpret. The cat might be making a little noise to see, are you up? And when you move around and say, go away, the answer actually is, yes, I'm up. So the cat might say, oh, good, it's time to start our day. Some cats do it because they're hungry. We feed our cats very well. Our cats are very fortunate. They have wonderful diets that we provide for them. And our biggest problem actually is obesity. So what happens is we end up feeding our cats less, so they don't get fat, and they might get hungry. So sometimes what we need, cats have left on their own, we need anywhere between 5 and 12 meals, small meals a day.
I didn't know that.
Okay, so often this morning waking you is because the bowl's empty and they're hungry. And I'd like to kind of go off topic a little, but not really. People will get up and say, well, there was a layer right on the bottom of the bowl. Why didn't he eat that? Well, if you can, you should look at your cat's front teeth. They're really tiny. And cats are not very good at prehending, picking up their food. So when the food is kind of in a pile, they are almost like, some cats are like a steam shovel. Watch your cat. They like pick up a bunch and they start chewing and it drops out as they're chewing. So when it gets down to that lower level, they can't necessarily get it up.
Oh.
So yes, there's food there, but it isn't accessible. So, again, it goes back to, no, the cat's not trying to aggravate you. The cat's trying to tell you that, from my cat point of view, yeah, there are 10 kibbles here, but I'm really frustrated because I'm hungry and I can't pick them up.
Ah, got it. Got it.
So maybe feeding the cat before you go to bed, leaving the cat a food dispensing toy that the cat knocks around with their paws, and the food rolls out. Now, they can pick the food up on the carpet, but it's in that little bowl that sometimes it's hard for them to get it up.
Mm-hmm.
So there are all sorts of ways to approach it. And again, as I said, when the first time your cat does it, if you don't get up, or if you get up and put the cat outside the door of your bedroom and say something like, I don't like that, slam, the cat might go, ooh, that was unpleasant. They might bang at the door for a little while, and you just have to not open the door till they're quiet, not interact with them till they're quiet, so they learn that quiet gets your attention, not noise.
I see. Now, I've heard people say, well, the cats will completely stay and keep scratching at the door, or they'll yowl for hours. Are you basically saying you just got to stick it out?
Well, what I'm saying is that a cat, if a cat hasn't woken you at night before, and begins to yowl for hours, then I would take that cat to a veterinarian. If a cat is yowling for hours, not always, but some of the time, that cat used to yowl for a little while and you would get up.
Yeah.
And what it is everybody's familiar with the slot machine. You put in, you put in 10 quarters, you put in number 11, you get back 12 quarters. Where do those 12 quarters go? They go right back in.
Yeah.
And so, if you had to put, some people, if they had to put in 50 quarters, would keep doing it because the payoff is there and the payoff is meaningful. So if the cat has to yowl for 10 minutes and you get up, then the next time 20 minutes and you get up, then the next time 30 minutes and you get up, then the cat says, well, heck, maybe if I yowl for an hour, they will get up.
Yeah, it usually works.
Right.
Yeah, oh boy. Oh, we have another question. Oh, this is one about a cat who's not afraid of anything. This is from Clarice. How do you teach a cat to be afraid of cars and stay out of the streets? I want my cat to come outside with me, but can't keep my eye on him all the time. He has no fear. One day he'd been lounging in the middle of the street on his back, and a car had to stop. and the owner came in and told her. Is there any way to teach a cat who absolutely has no street smarts, Dr. Horowitz, to be afraid and stay out of the street?
No. I mean, they, you know, if they, if something bad doesn't happen, why would you know that that's not a good thing to do?
Right.
And they don't have language. So that if you would like to give your cat access to the outdoors, then you may need to be a bit more restrictive about it. You could teach your cat to wear a harness. Premier Pet Products makes a great harness called the Come With Me Kitty Harness.
Hmm.
You can take your cat for a walk. You, there is a fence called Perfect, P-U-R-R-F-E-C-T, fence. Mm-hmm. And it's a cat fence, and it's kind of made out of a mesh. And so when the cats climb up it to get out, it actually bends inward and drops them back into the yard.
Oh.
So the cats can be in the yard, mm-hmm. but they can't get out. And it is a little more difficult for other animals to get in. But if you live near a street and your cat is oblivious to the dangers involved, then you probably should not leave your cat outside like that. If he hasn't learned by now, the only way he's going to learn could be fatally.
Yeah. Yeah. I know some people have talked about where they try and, you know, they hold on to the cat and then they have a car drive by and then they try and, you know, spook the cat and to try and make that association.
Well, what happens then is you really have no way of knowing if the cat associates the car going by
right.
or you with being spooked.
Right.
So I just think that it's safer to really supervise the cat. Now, when your if you go outside with your cat, and every time your cat goes to wander off your property, you shoo it back. You know, go 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 go, get back, and the cat runs into the garden, and you leave it alone, and it comes out, and you say go 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 go, and it goes back into the garden. It may learn when you're out there that it's supposed to stay in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
When you're not out there, I don't know what it would learn. Because that, again, would be associated with you creating an unpleasant situation.
Right.
The cat says, I don't want to do that.
Right, yes. I think that, yeah, it makes sense. And then we don't really know how the cat is perceiving it.
No, they don't speak English.
No, no, our phone lines are open. I want to make sure everyone knows about that. It's 888-GO-FOR-IT. We're looking at photographs of the cats by clicking the purple Look While You Listen buttons. If you just joined us, that takes you to my webpage, wildaboutpets.net, and the Look While You Listen page. And we're looking at all sorts of cute cats. You mentioned something called enrichment, and I used to work at a zoo, and so we talked a lot about this, and I know this is providing meaningful experiences and things to stimulate the cat. A cat can often get bored, can't it, Dr. Horowitz? And bored cats can sometimes cause trouble. So what are the key things that you think we need to do to make sure we are enriching our cat's lives?
I personally don't like the word boredom because
okay.
boredom implies, you know, like when a kid says I'm bored, it doesn't mean there isn't anything to do. It means
right.
they can't think of what to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
But our cats do think of what to do some of the time, and it's not what we want. And what it means is that we aren't providing for them appropriate outlets that are acceptable to them and to us for their natural curiosity about their environment, their desire to engage in hunting behavior, their desire to climb, their desire to shred things, their desire to chase things that move, so that it isn't so much that they're bored as much as the choices that they make to fulfill those needs are not the ones we want. So when I think of enrichment, I think of going back to how would a cat spend their time? Well, cats would spend a great deal of their time hunting and looking for food. Well, our cats don't have to do anything but sort of fall off the bed or the couch and amble into the kitchen and eat out of the food bowl that's probably full all the time. So it doesn't take up much of their day. So there are all sorts of ways that you could make eating, because I mentioned a few minutes ago they eat between 5 and 12 small meals a day, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you could put 12 little bowls around your house and put a couple kibbles in each one. So the cat trots over, oh, that one's empty. Where's the next one? Oh, that one's empty. Where's an? Oh, here's one. And then he eats and he's full, and then he goes and rests and goes, I think I want some more. Oh, so he has to look around So he's actually foraging for his food.
Oh, that's very smart now. But the key, isn't it, Dr. Horowitz, not to have 12 full bowls so they can eat all day long as much as they want. It's that you'd have a little, they'd finish it, and then it would be empty, correct?
It depends on your eating pattern of your cat. But what I would normally recommend is that people, before we would go to this type of feeding pattern, I would have an owner measure how much their cat actually consumes in a day so that we know that my cat eats 3/4 of a cup a day. Because eating's a good marker of health. I wouldn't start by putting out 12 bowls. I might just put out 2 so that the cat gets used to going from one to the other. I want the cat to maintain the same intake that it always does, because if it doesn't take in enough food, that's a sign that either it's anxious or it doesn't feel well. We don't want precipitous weight loss, which can lead to other medical problems. So we want to slowly make that change, so we need to know what the baseline feeding is. Another way is to provide a food dispensing toy, and there are lots of those out that you can fill them with kibble, and you can manipulate the size of the holes. So when we first teach a cat how to use one, we make the holes really big, and the cat, and there are lots of them. And the cat taps it once with their nose and a bunch of kibble falls out. Once they can empty that really quickly, then we make it harder. And eventually it might take them longer, and that's fun for them. It's like catching prey to have to work to get their food. And so Premier Pet Products make something they call the Eggercizer. You can actually make food dispensing type toys by using a clean yogurt container with a top and poking really big holes in it at first and putting the kibble in it. And I would put some other treats the cat really likes, and the cat's going to push it with its nose or its feet or something to try and get the treats out. And when they fall out, they'll learn, and you can make it smaller, the hole smaller as time goes by. But that's one way to enrich the cat's life. Another is we've learned that cats usually play really vigorously for about 5 minutes with a toy, and then their attention seems to diminish. Mm-hmm. But if you remove that toy and either bring it back or replace it with another, then the level of play goes back up to where it was before. So we know we need to rotate the toys for the cat. So one day we leave out a furry mouse in a laundry basket, something about laundry baskets cats love. And then the next day, you know, 2 days later, we leave a ping pong ball in the bathtub in a cardboard box. And so we figure out what our cat likes, and we rotate them. Climbing towers. Cats like to climb and look out windows.
Yes.
They like to get inside of things. They like really soft materials to lay on. So sometimes just putting down an old Afghan they might like to lay on, or an old scarf that they like to do that. Some cats love to lay on newspaper. Don't know why, but maybe they want to become smarter. I don't know. But, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do. And I would have to say that probably cats don't need everything put away every day.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I've heard sometimes the idea of if you just leave the toy out all the time, you know, nonstop, then the cat will stop playing with it. But so I liked your saying that, you know, you just need to switch it out a little bit every once in a while.
Sure. And remember, the cat is sort of like the toddler. When you buy them a birthday present, they dump it out and they love the box.
Oh, yes, right. Oh, I know. It's so simple. Oh, we have a follow-up here. Ivy wrote in again, and this was in regards to you're talking about cats liking a mark. She's wondering if you use an old scratching post from a previous cat that used to live in the home but, of course, is no longer there, will the new cat not use that old scratching post?
It might depend on the personality of the cat. Mm. So if it was a very bold cat, it might say, well, now it's my turn to mark. And if it's a very shy, timid cat, it may say, oh, maybe that cat's still here. You know, if the scent still remains, after a while it's going to be gone. But if the scent still remains, the cat might say, you know, I'm not going to overmark. I'm going to not mark on top of another cat that, even though I can't see it, it smells like it's still here.
So if the cats are not using that scratching post at all, that may be a tip-off that they don't want to use that
one. Or it's in the wrong place.
Got it. Okay, well, there's a couple things then that, Ivy, you could try about that. Again, thank you for your question. Let's talk about Can cats be trained? Can they be taught? For instance, can they learn the word no and learn to respond to that? And I have a cute little picture of 10 where a cat is sitting in front of, I'm sorry, it's 19, sitting in front of a chalkboard just to be cute. But what do you think about this, Dr. Horowitz?
Well, I don't like my dog owners to use the word no either, because no what? No breathing, no jumping, no meowing. I mean, it's not specific to what you want the cat to do. We think of it as specific in that no means don't do what you're doing. And we know exactly what we want the cat to stop doing.
Right.
But the cat might not know. So really, if you yell no, then the best it could be is an interrupter of behavior. So it interrupts the animal from doing what it's doing at that present time, and you might be able to redirect it to something else. At the worst, it's just a noise that the dog, that the cat says, well, they're making some noise, but I don't know that they're talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
So really, cats can learn a number of words, so can dogs. So putting something under verbal control really makes more sense. So if your kitten's on the counter going over and saying, off, and picking it up and putting it on the floor, the kitten might go, You say that word, that doesn't sound very pleasant, and you put me on the floor, maybe being up here isn't a good thing because you've removed the kitten and you put it down. And you're not harming the kitten. You're not yelling at the kitten. You shouldn't be smacking the kitten or am, those kinds of things. You don't need to do that.
Right.
And people do it with their tone of voice, no, but maybe it would be more instructive to actually remove the kitten at the time so the kitten says, oh, off, or whatever that noise is, that gruff thing means, don't be on the counter, which is really what you're trying to say to the cat, right?
Exactly, but it sounds like you need to be consistent.
You need to be consistent, and you need to couple the word with an action. That's really how we would communicate to someone who is doesn't understand our language. Think about it being in a foreign country, and you're trying to explain to someone what you want. All the signs that you make are action. Like, you know, you point to yourself, and you make walking with your hands when you say, you know, I want to go. And you draw a picture with your hands or on a piece of paper of what you want, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, since we can't do that with our cats, we have to be pretty bold and open. So if we don't want the cat to jump on the table while we're eating dinner, maybe when we see the cat ready to spring from the floor, we might clap our hands and say, uh-uh. And the cat would stop. And then we have to say to our cat, oh, what a good kitty, and pet them. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they won't know that they did the right thing. And that's probably one of the biggest mistakes people make, is that they punish what they don't want, and they forget to reward what they do.
You're right. We do forget to do that. So a case where the cat is going up into the bookshelves where there's fragile, beautiful, you know, little delicate items and knocking them over, sometimes just accidentally, just by, you know, being up there, we would use off and we would constantly move the cat down.
Well, that's one thing, but the other thing that I would ask someone is, well, where does your cat have to climb? Cats like to climb, and they like to be up high. So when we want to change a behavior, it really works best if we say, why is the animal doing that? What do they hope to accomplish with that behavior? And if they stop that behavior, are they going to replace it with something else they also don't like? So if the cat is gay on the bookshelf because it wants to sit up high and it has no climbing towers, well, if I make the bookshelf inaccessible but don't give them somewhere else to climb up on, they're going to climb on something else.
You're right. Mm-hmm.
If I move all my fragile items to another spot on the bookshelf but put a place for my cat to rest right there, would my cat be contented to just get in that spot and do whatever it was looking to do, whether it's look out the window or watch the whole room while we're all in there watching TV? But you have to ask, why is my cat doing this? Because they're not doing it to aggravate you. They're doing it to meet a need that they have.
Right. Perfect. Yes. Right. And if we just think about what are the underlying needs,
right,
then that is a cue to the behavior and how we can help shape
new behavior that satisfies both of us.
Okay. Oh, that's great. That's perfect. Now, what about the cats? Sometimes you hear, and I don't know if this is our interpretation, that if like the owners leave and then they come home and the cat has knocked every single item off of every shelf, is that expressing some anger or displeasure? measure?
I mean, I'll give you an example of a case I saw many years ago. This cat's name was Loki, and she brought the cat to me because he would chase their dog. He would knock things off the dresser. He once knocked a whole dish drainer full of dishes on the floor during a dinner party.
Wow. Right?
So Loki had his moment. But it also turned out that Loki was not having his needs met for play and investigation. He was a very curious, charming, outgoing cat who had this huge curiosity about the world that wasn't being satisfied. He would chase the other cat in the house. They only had one climbing tower. So we got two climbing towers. The chasing really diminished. We offered him one meal a day out of his feeder toy. We trained him to a leash and a harness and took him out for a walk, and all those behaviors went away. And she sent me an email with a picture that said, completely changed kitty. But he wasn't changed. He just had the right outlet for what he wanted to do. He was just frustrated. He needed to feel satisfied in what he wanted to do. His needs were not being met, and people might say he was acting out. I don't know. I prefer to focus not on what I want the cat to, or dog to stop, but what would I like them to do instead.
Okay. Yes, that makes total sense. Let's talk a little bit about aggression, which we had mentioned at the beginning of the show. A photograph number 20, we have a little cat biting someone. And also there's a very wonderful video. There's two of them, actually, that I want to call people's attention to. One has to do with cats loving to get into our computers and all. One's called Why the Printer Won't Work, which you'll have to look at. And then there's another one, The Mean Kitty Song, which talks about some of the biting behavior. But let's talk about when there is aggression, like my cat who would just, you know, chomp on people's feet that would come in, or the cat who, it, for no apparent reason, Dr. Horowitz, seems to just approach and then, you know, bite and draw blood. I know this is a huge topic, but any thoughts, any causes, and what we can do to intervene with this behavior?
Well, the first thing that I really would like to say that I think is really important is that aggression is a communication tool for an animal to change the outcome of a social situation. So it's not the animal being mean or spiteful. It's not the animal being angry at you or trying to get back at you. It's the animal saying, something's going on here that I don't like, and this appears to me to be the way to change it. So there is aggression that's related to play. So if we let our cats play with us in a very rough, aggressive manner, which is the way they play with one another, then we might be injured because we've given the wrong message. There's petting-related aggression. I mentioned that a little while ago. We like to stroke our cat. Many cats do not like to be stroked like that. And so they would prefer to maybe be scratched. If we watch cats that groom one another, they groom each other around the head and neck. They don't stroke each other down the back. So a lot of cats like to have their, you know, little pats on the top of their head or being scratched around their ears, but they don't necessarily want to be stroked down their whole body. That's an individual thing. Many cats will signal when they're unhappy by either putting their ears back, making their eyes big and wide, twitching their tail back and forth, maybe just the tip. And that's the cat saying, I'm uncomfortable here. I don't like what's going on. And if we don't recognize those early signs, then given the different temperament and experience of the cat, they may feel compelled to go, excuse me, I don't think you were listening to me. And boom, they bite. And very often those bites are not injurious. They can be. They can break the skin and be very injurious. But many times they're just leave me alone bites. Cats that charge people who come in the house, that is sort of hard to say. Some cats are territorial and are very threatened by people who come in their house. And if that's the case, maybe the cat would be more comfortable being confined away when company came. Some cats are, it is a play behavior, and they just chase things that move. So maybe they don't have enough play or activity in their life.
Okay. Well, we have just about a minute and a half left. Dr. Horowitz, now I know you are available for people to still write in questions online, and I have the link there. It's Ask Dr. Horowitz at catchow.com. That's part of Purina's Cat Chow website. But you also, for the in-depth consultations, people could contact you, couldn't they?
Not by email.
Okay.
Fortunately or unfortunately, as a licensed veterinarian, I'm bound by the Practice Act of my state, and most states are this way. In order for me to treat a client, I need to have what's called a valid client-patient relationship. It means I got to see you and see your pet.
Sure.
And I think that's the best.
Yes.
Because then I can evaluate everything, including the pet's health. So if they want to know if there's a veterinary behaviorist near them, they can go to the website of the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists, and they can see where the closest behaviorist to them is.
Wonderful. I have that under the additional resources section.
And then if someone is here in the St. Louis area, which is where I live, if they ask their veterinarian, they can be referred to me, or they can call the office, and I'm not going to give out my phone number on the radio, but they can
Correct.
Certainly schedule an appointment.
Correct. Well, you'll let me know if this is all right. I do have from the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists your contact page that has your office number listed.
Fine.
Well, we are out of town. Dr. Horowitz, this has been fabulous. It goes by so fast. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. I hope everybody learned quite a bit.
I sure did, and I believe that would be a resounding yes. My guest today has been Dr. Deborah Horowitz, veterinary behaviorist and one of the vets on Animal Planet's show, House Cat House Calls. You'll find the links to contact her at thecatchow.com so you can write in your questions, and a couple other resources on the bottom of the page of my photos. Remember, there's two wonderful cat videos that you've got to see. You can just click those links. I have them next to the photographs. All my shows and photos are archived for your on-demand 24/7 listening. Thank you so much for logging in today.